Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. I'm John Norman. Alongside me, as ever, Steve Harmison. Looking back at the Sri Lanka series, which England wrapped up late on day four, a six-wicket win. So two big, big victories. The perfect starter to what is going to be quite a year. We're going to look back at all the action. Myself and Harmy are going to be joined by Andrew Fernando from ESPN Cricket Info to give us Sri Lanka's perspective. And then, at the end of the show, we're going to try and work out which big-name player is going to be getting some bad news when the first 11 is selected for that first test match against India, which you will be able to hear live and exclusively on TalkSport 2. Plenty to get our teeth into. You're listening to the Cricket Collective. So, Palmy, 24 hours out. We should have been up at 4 a.m., but a lie-in. What riches. Thank you to everyone involved in that victory for England. The players can relax by the beach. I can see my family. You can too. But plenty to discuss. We did talk about the series as a whole a little bit on the Following On podcast yesterday. But a chance today, 24 hours on, just to assess where England are, where it went right, areas of concern, I suppose. And also, we're going to get the Sri Lankan perspective as well. Fernando from ESPN Cricket Info will be joining us a bit later. But, well, first things first, we did talk about it a little bit yesterday, but, you know, Joe Root has got a lot of plaudits over the last couple of days, and rightly so. I mean, I think that was the first time England had won five overseas test matches. You've got to go back to 1922 or something ridiculous. It's been that long. So, yeah, credit to him. And it's great that he can just look back and just enjoy. I mean, at times I don't think he's been enjoying playing cricket for England over the last couple of years. But certainly today is a day to enjoy.
Definitely a day to enjoy. I'm sure he's there on the beach and, you know, the travel over to Chennai will be an enjoyable one, sitting in his business class seat, enjoying the riches of travelling with, you know, pretty much the world off his shoulders, because I think you're right. Joe has travelled quite a bit in the last 18 months with the weight on his shoulders, you know, whether it's the pressures of playing one-day cricket, constantly trying to force himself into this one-day side and everybody else banging on about how good or not good a one-day player he is, and he shouldn't be in the one-day 2020 team, and he shouldn't, you know, question marks on that, which is complete nonsense for me, because for me he's one of the best batsmen all formats here around the world, and B, we've had England have had in all time. So I'm sure he'll enjoy his trip over to Chennai. The what's going to come is going to be unbelievable pressure from, I think, all quarters, and it's, I think, thankfully for England, there's going to be no crowds there, because I think that would add the pressure to the series as well. But I think it's been a fascinating few weeks for the England captain. He's come off a prolonged period out, you know, through himself having time to contemplate on what he was going to entail and move forward through India, Australia, also to work on his game. And you can see that that's bear fruit in the two test matches in Sri Lanka. So I'm over the moon for the England captain. I think he's a wonderful young man. He's somebody who I think England can hang the hat on as a role model, along with his predecessor and Sir Alistair Cook. I think England, from a leadership point of view, as a person, are in a good place. Whether they're in as a good place as a team, I think is yet to be determined, because we can all see how well Joe played, and he did. He played absolutely brilliantly. But there's still question marks on... They're still there. The question marks are still there. The top of the order question marks, the spin bowling question marks. And that will ramp up this minute they get to India because of A, the surfaces they're going to play on, B, the quality of the opposition they're going to play, because that certainly helped in Sri Lanka. England won two test matches in Sri Lanka, and then in two different occasions, first innings, first test match, second innings, second test match, Sri Lanka give in and let England, you know, basically bully them into submission. And I would go as far as saying that, and I stick by that. England did the job on Sri Lanka rather than Sri Lanka just giving it away. I think the pressure that England put them on, scoreboard pressure, and Joe Root himself, you know, really ramming home his ability in, you know, tough conditions, in the heat, in the turning balls. I think he showed what a fantastic player he was, and I think Sri Lanka buckled under that sort of pressure. Different kettle of fish when they get to India. I can't see India buckling to that pressure if Joe Root does get in and back for a long period of time, because on the other hand, India will not do what Sri Lanka did. India have the baton to do exactly the same as Joe Root, if not a better unit to potentially score more runs in England.
One of the reasons that I think we're all a little bit more chipper following day four is the fact that Jack Leach and Dominic Best did take wickets in second innings. And, you know, I was talking yesterday on the following on show saying, I can't remember that ever happening, or certainly hadn't happened. I could remember a previous instance where in the first innings, all 10 wickets went the way of pace and all 10 wickets went the way of spin in second. It's never happened before. So there you go. Either way, let's have a little listen to what Joe Root had to say. He said he was delighted that Dominic Best and Jack Leach's hard work is starting to pay off.
You know, they're doing all the right things in practice. We're having very good conversations about how to play in these conditions, both with bat and ball. And I thought they executed it really well today. Even through that partnership towards the end of their innings, we didn't really panic. I think in the past, we've probably been guilty of that. So, you know, really impressed with the way they've gone about things. And it's a really good sign that, more than anything, they in themselves, they know that they want to keep getting better, and there's further that they can go, and there's more that they can do, and that in itself is really exciting to see them have success and know that they want to keep improving.
Well, there's no doubt about it. England need both Bess and Leach having those kind of series which define them essentially, you know, and not in the kind of way that Jack Leach batted alongside Ben Stokes at Headingley kind of definition. If those two bowlers don't step up, then it's going to be tough for England. Another player who really stepped up in this series and, of course, isn't going to be part of three test matches, and that is Jos Buttler. Let's hear what Joe Root had to say about the decision to send him home after the first test.
Any captain around the world tell you want your best players available, fit, firing at the top of the game all of the time. And I think the other thing to mention is I think Jos has kept extremely well in these conditions. I thought he was outstanding, you know, flawless throughout the two games. So huge credit for that too, as alongside his runs and the way he dealt with the pressure today. But you always want all your best players there as often as possible. Unfortunately, because of the world we're in right now, it's not feasible, and we have to manage that as best we can. But he's still got an opportunity to affect the series, and you know, I'm sure he'll be desperate to carry on the good form.
He really was outstanding, wasn't he, Jos Buttler, behind the stumps, with the bat, he looked composed. He actually, do you know what? He batted really well in Sri Lanka 2 years ago as well. So there is a feeling about him, certainly when he was dropped from the England side, I think he was dropped from the England side because he couldn't bat against Nathan Lyon, essentially. Seems to have improved, but for me, it's always been mental with Jos Buttler. The technique at times against fast bowling maybe does fall across to the offside. He can get trapped moving across the crease to balls coming into him. And, you know, against top quality spin, if you don't play that often, it takes you a while to get going and get up to speed. But he looked, there was a composure about Jos Buttler throughout this series, behind the stumps and batting, that I haven't always seen from him.
Yeah, and I think he's come off the back of a difficult period when his IPL team didn't do that well. So I was looking at the decision and thinking, well, it might not be a bad thing that Josh Butler does miss part of this winter, but I would have preferred him to miss these two test matches. I'd have rather him played all four test matches against India. If, like Ed Smith says, and Chris Silverwood, Joe Root, he is our number one wicketkeeper because this is our marquee series. So there's a lot of stuff baffles me about what England have tried to do over the course of the next 4 to 6 weeks. There's a lot of stuff that I don't think you can just hide behind the issue of, and I'm not making any light of this, not whatsoever, of the sort of mental health and looking after people in a bubble and stuff like that. But I still think you're picking a team, four teams for four test matches in India against the best team in the world. For me, that should be the best team you could possibly pick each time. And if you want to leave, you want to leave players out for Sri Lanka, then I can understand that. I'll take that because I think, the mental health and well-being of everybody is so important. But I look at this and I see Johnny Bairstow going home. I see Josh Butler going home after a test match. Just when Josh Butler's finally not winning people over, because he doesn't have to win anybody over. He's a seriously talented boy, but he's in a good position. And when you're in a good position and a good headspace, we'll see when we'll hear talking, the likes of Mark Nicholas, Kevin Peterson when he comes, Mark Butcher. As a batsman, when you're in a good headspace, you want the game to come tomorrow. You want another game to come tomorrow. You don't want any nets. You just want to face balls in the middle. Make it count. Runs are your currency. And that's what I think, that's where Joe Root's at the minute. Joe Root can't wait for Chennai to start. He can't wait for Chennai to start, no matter who's bowling at him. And I think Josh Butler is starting to get into that mindset that, and I think he's game plan, and I agree, it is mental. It has been mental with Joss. I'm not sure he understood which way he wanted to go, whether it was to play the dasher that the one day, what he was perceived to be putting aside for to try and take the game away, number seven, not wicketkeeper, to then taking the wicketkeeping gloves over, play a test match win. And I think he's tried to do that, and I think he's done that really well this last 2 weeks. And it's just going to be a shame that he's not going to be there. The two spinners, as much as everybody's saying, and a lot of people are saying, we should play Broad and Anderson and not play one of the spinners because they are, Broad and Anderson are, just as effective of closing the game and, really getting a hold of the game. That was against Sri Lanka. This is a different kettle of fish. If the ball's going to turn, you need two spinners. And especially looking at the batting lineup of India, they're all right-handers. So you're going to need your left arm spinner.
We'll talk about India a little later in the show. I do just want to hear quickly from Ed Smith, who did speak before the second test match. And he was saying that essentially he was defending the decision to rest Johnny Bairstow for these two test matches.
We are being pragmatic. The pragmatism being that if you keep people in a bubble unchanged for 3 months, January, February, March, and expect them to play every game in every format, they will not be able to perform at their best and England will be damaged as a result. So it is absolutely a pragmatic point that we wish to give people breaks, as we've discussed with the players, and we've had their understanding, and they also see that it's for the players' benefit as well as for England's benefit. And it's pragmatism, which really is the foundation of our whole policy, Nick.
So there you have it. I mean, part of the problem is that you don't really know what's been going on behind the scenes, do you? And it's not just about the IPL coming up, which a lot of people are slightly uneasy about. Are we really resting players from England duty so they can be fit for the IPL? That's a separate point, which we can discuss. But there's something else, isn't there? There's a World T20 this year. That very much is a focus for England. And they want to play their first team in the World T20. So I imagine that means that Butler's coming back for those five T20 games. Again, it doesn't really, for people like me and you, resting anybody from a test match, especially against India, surely you rest them for the test matches against Sri Lanka, like you have done with Stokes and Archer. Not for India, especially if England go 1-0 up. I mean, Josh Butler scores a century, England win, and then he goes. I can't think of that ever happening, ever, in test history. But anyway, we'll just have to wait and see. That's certainly a topic that's going to rumble on and on and on. Listen, We've got plenty to talk about on the show. We've got Andrew Fernando joining us very shortly. We're going to get the Sri Lankan perspective. We are going to talk about the India series later on. And I want to get your 11 for that first test match. I want to know who you, Steve Harmison, is going to drop. Who's going to get the tap on the shoulder midway point of training the day before and told, sorry, but your 400 plus test wickets aren't going to be required for the first test match tomorrow. Plenty more to come. You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
But with ease, Sibley knocks one into the leg side and England complete a remarkable day's cricket. They came into the day behind the game and they end it having won this test match by 6 wickets and they win the series 2-0.
Hello and welcome to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. Myself, John Norman and Steve Harmison, looking back at England's successful series in Sri Lanka, which finished on day 4 in Gaul in the second test match with Joe Root's men wrapping up a comfortable, in the end, 6-wicket win. Pleased to say that Andrew Fernando from ESPN Cricket Info joins us to review the series as opposed to preview it, which we seem to be doing not that long ago, such as the nature of back-to-back test matches. And Fidel, thanks for joining us. Look, cricket has long had these almost unanswerable questions. You know, Tendulkar or Lara, Gooch or Cook, Hobbs or Hutton. Which was the worst batting display? Sri Lanka in first innings of first test or second innings in second?
That's a great question and one I think worth every ounce of discussion as the other ones you mentioned earlier on. I mean, they were both appalling on a level that it's hard to put into words how bad they were. I mean, on one hand, England bowled really poorly on that first morning of the first test. Dom Best was getting wickets with, you know, wide half trackers, which, you know, like a club batsman would have been disappointed to get out to, or like almost appalled to get out to. And yet we had the test level players getting out to them. And then, you know, the collapse on the fourth day of the second test was, I think, in some ways even more reprehensible. Like, you know, maybe like skill wise, that first day, first morning was bad because, you know, the England were bowling poorly and, you know, it was kind of like a surrender in the face of English mediocrity. Whereas England bowled a lot better, I thought, in yesterday's or in day 4's collapse. But Sri Lanka had already, you know, kind of worked themselves in the series. They'd had 2 good innings, the second innings of the first test, first innings of the second test. And it's not like they were out of form or they'd just come in fresh and hadn't had preparation, which are kind of excuses that they can use for that first innings. On that second innings, they were just, it's like they all turned their kind of batting conscience off. They were like, we don't have to be responsible anymore. And once you see, you know, one or two of your teammates get out playing these kind of aggressive shots, maybe it should be a signal to the middle and lower order that you should be buckling down. You should maybe bat normally, try to get yourself into the innings. It's not like there were any indications the previous day that the pitch was unplayable. You know, Root scored 180 odd and was only out because he got run out, and other players kind of maybe didn't score as much, but they at least were able to spend some time at the crease. And for Sri Lanka, and we saw, you know, I think Dom Sibley's innings really put into perspective how bad that second innings was, because Dom Sibley, a player who'd never played Test in Asia before, had been out for single figure scores right through the series until that innings, clearly doesn't have, I mean, even now doesn't have that good a technique against spin, but did have some grit, did show some determination, was like, I'm going to stay here and get through this for my team. And we didn't see any of the Sri Lanka batsmen do that. And I think that second innings, I think, was just on all fronts, just unwatchable.
What about Mickey Arthur, Fidel? Because Mickey Arthur is relatively new to the Sri Lankan job. You know, what changes can he do along with Grant Flower? And you know, is it a simple mindset change? Or do they have to sort of go back into first-class cricket and Mickey Arthur really grab the coaches and work on the technical side of the game? Because if the TV crews had a Mickey Arthur cam, that would have been comedy value alone, because he was apoplectic about five or six times running with them fancy shorts on. He was like something off like a Carry On movie, running along back and forward along the balcony. What could Mickey Arthur do to somebody like Kissel Pereira? Because we have, on the following on, we've had like a laugh out loud moment every day, and Pereira's come into that laugh out loud moment at least three times, four times during this test match series.
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, I think Kissel Pereira is batting out of position. He's not a test match opener. So that's like one thing that I would say. He's definitely, he could be a four or a five, but he's not an opener. So that's the first thing I'll say. I'll leave Kissel Pereira alone after that. In terms of your Mickey Arthur question, I think you're right. He's still figuring this team out, and the team's probably still figuring him out. And there's some serious teething issues there. He came to the press conference after the defeat, and he was like, he was basically at a loss to explain it. And he was like, I got to go and talk to the guys and figure out what happened, because that wasn't the plan. The plan wasn't to go out all guns blazing, playing incredibly kind of rash shots. The plan very much was to bat sensibly, and no one had followed the plan. And so there's a serious disconnect between coach and players. When you have the coach saying the plan was to do this, they went and did the complete opposite. There's clearly a bridging of a relationship or of a kind of a minds that needs to happen there. As you know, in terms of your question about the greater problems with Sri Lankan cricket, I think the problems are very much at a domestic first-class level. I've been saying this for many, many years. Many other people have been saying this for many, many years. Kumar Sangakkara and Mahela Jayawardene have come up with plans to retool or kind of completely overhaul first-class cricket. And they're still coming up with plans. They're kind of in the process of advising the cricket board, or the sports ministers kind of got them in this role where they're advising sports bodies. But Sri Lanka cricket has been incredibly resistant to any kind of change. And they're playing with this insanely outdated and diluted system. So what you don't have is, you know, I think part of the problem in the two innings we mentioned was that players played like their places weren't really in contention or weren't at stake. They just went out and played the way, you know, with irresponsibly. And to have that kind of responsibility, you know that there's not a group of people behind you, group of batsmen behind you pushing for your place. And we don't have that in Sri Lankan cricket. There are no obvious replacements. To many of these places, for some there are, but for many of these places there aren't. So that's kind of maybe what creates that complacency, knowing that you've had the job for a while, there's no one really at domestic cricket, and even those who are coming in from domestic cricket, there is no history of them coming in and immediately doing well at the top level. It takes, you're learning your game at test level. So they know that the selectors have invested all this time in them. They've said, okay, you have 10, 15, 20, 25 test matches. If you put in another guy, even if he's really talented, he's still not going to be able to come into test level and start scoring runs straight away. We've seen that over many, many years in Sri Lankan cricket now. And I think at some level, the players know that. And they know that I'm the person who's been invested in. So they're going to stick with me probably. So I think that is a serious problem. Mickey Arthur can do things kind of top down stuff. He can only work with the players that have been given to him. And the players that he's getting, unfortunately, are not of a very high quality. And there are very, very easy fixes for Sri Lankan cricket. Reduce the number of teams. You've got 14 first-class teams. Reduce that down to 6 or 7. You've got to have better pitchers at first-class level. You've got to make sure that all your first-class players can play professionally and not have to rely on other jobs, which is very much the case now. You've got to make sure that the game is spread into other parts of the country beyond Colombo. Sri Lankan cricket is very Colombo-centric. If you want to play professional cricket, you've got to come to Colombo and play it. And you lose a lot of talent that way. There are all these things that people have been saying for many, many, many years. None of this has been done. I think that is by far the biggest challenge that cricket in Sri Lanka faces.
Isn't the other problem, of course, that Sri Lanka plays so little test cricket? Yeah. You know, if you're a kid growing up, the point me and Harmi were talking about on the following on podcast yesterday was England plays so much test cricket. They know that even when they're behind, if they lose a bad toss or they don't bat particularly well for a session or bowl particularly well for a day, they know if they, as long as they keep in the game, they're going to have a chance. It's going to come back their way. But Sri Lanka don't have that because they don't have the muscle memory. And you saw that they competed in stages, but when it came to the crucial moment, it was England's 14 test matches last year, 17 this year. That experience is what got them over the line. The other thing is, you know, you talk about spinning the game in Sri Lanka. Tell us just a little bit for people who are unaware, but is it Jaffna? Did they win the Lankan Premier League? I'm not sure if I've got the correct name, but you know, that's a part of the country which traditionally hasn't produced a lot of cricketers for Sri Lanka. Do you see the Lankan Premier League, if it continues, maybe actually bizarrely helping Test cricket?
I think that's a really good question. Jaffna is a city that has a lot of cricket tradition. There are schools there that play it very seriously. If you go there, it's, you know, cricket is by far the biggest sport. People love cricket there. I think the geopolitical kind of angle of it is that also it was strung up in Sri Lanka's civil war, which ended in 2019. And so it was kind of cut off from the rest of the country for such a long time, which is part of the reason that it hasn't produced kind of any test cricketers. I think things like the Lanka Premier League can help. I think they're at the end of the day, though, they're still private ventures. And there's only so much kind of private venture money that is going to go into somewhere like a Jaffna. What I think would be much more worthwhile and much more sustainable is if Sri Lankan cricket took its responsibility to take cricket out into cities like Jaffna that have this kind of love for the game and to develop talent within it. There's no academies up there. It's such a hard road for a Jaffna cricketer to be kind of brought into the Sri Lankan cricket system. You have to have a lot of things go your way. You have to have a lot of luck. You have to have parents that understand that, you know, cricket might be an actual profession. You've got to have local clubs that you can join if you can't leave for Colombo, if you don't know anyone in Colombo to live with. All of these things, the infrastructure just isn't there right now. And Sri Lanka cricket has not showed any vision or any desire to extend the infrastructure. And it's not just Jaffna, there are other cities all around the country, you know, in many, many provinces, in Uber province, in the eastern provinces, even parts of the southern province, where this infrastructure doesn't exist. And something like an LPL can help kind of boost that infrastructure, but it's only going to be like a 5%, 10% thing. Like it's never going to be like super sustainable. It's only as far as that franchise is interested in aiding kind of the development of cricket there, that it's Sri Lanka cricket has really got to do the heavy lifting, and they're not doing that.
Okay. Brilliant stuff, Fidel. Look, we're going to get your take on how England have done as well, whether you've been impressed by them, the weaknesses that you see, and how suited you think the England side are ahead of that four test series in India, which starts at the end of next week. There's going to be plenty of cricket to talk about over the next few years, that's for sure. And you're listening to a cricket show on TalkSport 2, The Cricket Collective, with myself, John Norman, and Steve Harmison.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Edge to slip. Just with that new ball slipping play, skidding on straight to him. Five for Ambledinia, his third five wicket haul, quite brilliant.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2, myself, John Norman, and Steve Harmison. Alongside us, Fidel Fernando from ESPN Cricket Info. Harmy, you had a question.
Yeah, Fidel, you've talked a lot about Sri Lankan, the structure of the cricket and what potentially went wrong in the two test matches against England and a bit of naivety. But there was a couple of positives. Angelo Matthews coming back in and scoring 100. Tiramani scoring 100. Having, you know, possibly like...
He must have read your article, Fidel.
Yeah, what you've mentioned about some players, you know, just constantly getting picked because Tiramani was averaging 22 off about 40 test matches, managed to get a test match 100. But the one I want to talk about is Ambledinia, you know, a little superstar potentially in the making there in Sri Lanka. He got 15 wickets, 9 wickets. Everybody else got 9 wickets that bowled in that series. But he looked as though he sort of grabbed a hold of test cricket and really give it a shake from a left-arm spin point of view.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he's been someone that's been really promising from the start. I think when he played a test series in South Africa and that was his debut series, and he got a 5-wicket haul in a win in Durban and then followed that up with another good performance in Port Elizabeth before he kind of injured his finger and wasn't able to bowl in the second innings. But he's just one of those players that just seems to have a maturity about him. Turns the ball a lot. I think that's really, really nice to see from a left-arm spinner that he's not just coming in and kind of varying his pace and kind of not just relying on subtlety, but he's also relying on like quite drastic turn at times. But he can, I mean, the subtlety side of the game, he can improve on. If he gets a good slider going, I think pretty much all of his wickets in this series were from that one that turns off the straight or that batsmen reach out for. And, you know, the most common dismissal was an edge to slip. If he manages to get that kind of Rangana Herat slider going, that one that goes on with the arm and the batsmen aren't picking it and brings LBWs and bold dismissals into play, I think he becomes a really, really dangerous spinner. And hopefully he can work on that. I mean, the number one person I think you would in the world that you would direct him to is Herat. So he's got that resource nearby. I hope that coaching staff kind of recognize that and you know have the two of them working together, because I think he is a very different spinner from Herath in terms of his height and kind of loop he gets with both of which are kind of advantages Herath never had. So he's just got a great kind of base to start working from. He's not the complete article, but I think you saw a lot of heart from him. He bowled 42 overs in that first innings, and then, you know, two sessions later or one and a half sessions later had to be out there again and was again by far Sri Lanka's most threatening bowler. So that tells you a lot about kind of the heart and the determination and the grit, something that a lot of his teammates lacked in this series.
So how did you assess England's spinners then? And, you know, how successful, I suppose, or what problems do you think they're going to be facing in India based on what you've seen from those two test matches? Of course, you saw Jack Leach 2 years ago when he was arguably more successful, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I think Leach is a very steady and very solid option. First of all, I don't think you can take much about their England spinners' proficiency from the first or the last innings of the series that Sri Lanka played. Those were kind of aberrations from a bowling perspective, because you didn't need to bowl that well to get the batsmen out the way they were playing. So I think Jack Leach definitely is someone who will be that kind of metronomic, who'll give you the lines and lengths and the control and will test the India batsman, I'm sure. Where I'm not so convinced is Dom Bess, whether he's, I can see, you know, some India batsmen kind of taking him on. That first test, I think, is going to be really interesting to see how he goes and how the India batsmen play him. I suspect that they'll go after him with a long series in mind, and knowing that if they attack Bess and they kind of take him, you know, neutralize him in that test, then they give themselves a big advantage for that series. And I suspect that a few India batsmen have got him lined up for that series.
And you talk about the spinners, but another department that England, I think, need to seriously have a look at. And, you know, we've talked about Johnny Bairstow still going home and Josh Butler, not England's, you know, best players being out there all the time. But there's a question mark on England's own somewhere. There's something from, you know, the working in Asia and being around the sort of culture in Asia. That's a massive headache for England going into India.
Yeah, I mean, interesting. I think there were some interesting comments from Sibley after the game. He said that he'd come to Sri Lanka with a particular game plan against spin that he thought it was going to work. And then obviously it went very wrong. And then he had to change, you know, mid-series to figure out another game plan. I think Sibley was a little bit lucky in that second innings where he did score runs, because he got quite a few like very close LBW decisions. Go his way. I think there were three kind of umpires' calls where they were hitting the wickets. So I'm not convinced that he's kind of really found a way yet. I think that innings was kind of built on determination and hope, and it happened to work for him. Zach Crawley again hasn't had a score as well. So I think they are a big kind of question mark going into that India series. Jadeja and Ashwin, I don't think it goes without saying, are going to be a much bigger challenge. That SG ball is different. It behaves different from the Kookaburra, which is used in Sri Lanka. So that's going to be a change. All of that, I think, is going to be just a much, much greater challenge for England. I think Root being there is, I mean, apart from Root, the only other batsman who kind of had the measure of the bowling this series, I think, was Josh Butler. And I think he's going home. So England have a lot of there's a lot to be kind of concerned about from a batting perspective, because they're going to get challenged a lot. They're going to get much, much sterner challenge in India than they did here.
And if you were to compare the England from 2021 and 2018, there's obviously similarities there. Which of the two series has impressed you, I suppose, the most?
I think 2018 was a more impressive kind of England team, because I think there were a lot more things that, you know, they also had Ben Stokes, you know, Ben Foulkes scoring much more liberally. They weren't just reliant on Root. They weren't reliant on a single player the way they were in this series. I think Keaton Jennings scored runs. So they fielded and bowled really well. I think Moeen, Adil Rashid and Jack Leach were a fantastic spin trio, all of whom had kind of different spells in which they kind of broke games open. So I think that was a much more impressive win for me. I think this England team, probably, I think because of what we've mentioned already, that the opening doesn't seem as good, over-reliant on Root, and Bess, I think, could potentially be someone that the India batsmen target.
And what is it meant for, you know, Sri Lankan people that England have come, they've now gone, looking back on the series, and, you know, the positivity that, you know, England have give to, or the world of cricket has give to the people of Sri Lanka in this difficult time?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were really excited to watch the series, less impressed by the way that Sri Lanka played in it. So I think those two innings have kind of left a sour taste in the mouth, but obviously incredibly happy that it could happen, that England were willing to tour. And we were able to create bubbles and wish that more people would have been able to see it, at least standing from that fort. But such is life at the moment, I guess. It was definitely a very well closely followed series at home, judging by, at the very least, by the anger that was felt at the end of it.
Brilliant stuff. And very, very quickly, Fidel, England and Sri Lanka aren't set to play in Sri Lanka. You'll, of course, be in England later this year in the FTP. I'm not sure when they'll be back, but let's just say they're back in 2024. Of that Sri Lanka 11, you can include a couple of the injured players and the captain. I mean, that was a big loss. He was by far the best batsman when England were last in Sri Lanka. So losing Karuna Ratne at the start was a huge blow. But of the team, who would you expect to still see in the Sri Lankan side next time England come touring, say they do in 2024?
Yeah, good question. I think the thing is, there's no kind of really old players apart from maybe Saranga Lakmal and Dilran Pereira, who almost certainly won't be there. The batting, I think most of them, even Matthews might be, you know, at the very tail end of his career, but 2024 doesn't seem outlandish that he's still around. Chandimal, Karunaratne, they're all kind of younger. Mendes, Kusal Pereira, I think that batting unit, we've seen that there's a propensity not to drop underperforming batsmen. So even if they underperform, they may still be there in the team. Let's hope Tirumana averages a little bit more than 24, though, next time.
Brilliant stuff. Mate, go well. We'll hopefully see you in England later this year, but keep in touch, and really appreciated your time and your work over on ESPN Crick Info over the last couple of weeks. That was Andrew Fernando from ESPN Crick Info. You're listening to the Cricket Collective with myself and Steve Harmson. Still to come, Harmy's 11 for that first test match. Who is he going to drop, Stuart Broad or Jimmy Anderson? You'll find out shortly.
Root plays it well this time, pushed off the back foot, a typical Joe Root shot.
Down the leg side again, Rishabh Pant, will this be another one-handed six? Yes it is!
Invention. It's just swatted away. Hello, unpleasant fly, doing an impression of the ball. I'll just whip you away over my head. I'll make up the shot. That's how good I am. Stokes in again. Small, isn't it? It's been taken. Stokes has done it again. Just when England needed a hero, they found one.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. Myself, John Norman, and Steve Harmison. We're going to have a little look ahead to the India series. I want to hear your 11. I'm going to give you mine. But Fernel made a point about the SG ball, the differences between using that in India and what we've seen in Sri Lanka, where they use a kookaburra. Give us a bit of an idea about what he meant.
Well, the kookaburra ball is... the leather's a bit softer and it scuffs and it gets softer very, very quickly. It's a bit more pronounced than the seam. But the SG ball is a little bit closer to what you would say what the Duke's ball was like. It's a little bit like what the old Reader used to be like. It's a little bit tougher, a bit more robust, not as, you know, the seam's not as pronounced. It's not as sharp as what the kookaburra ball is. You know, you get a brand new kookaburra ball and you start throwing up in the air, you could literally like cut your fingers on it because the seam's that sharp. And that's why for seamers, it's so important for the first 10 overs. You put it in the right area because that's when it does its most. That's why it swings as much, because the seam's big and pronounced. And then when it goes soft and the seam goes into the ball, it's very, very difficult to get the ball off straight. That's why you see a lot of spinners do well, you know, spinners play a lot in the Southern Hemisphere. So I think that is a topic of conversation potentially when they're picking the side, that the ball might do a little bit more through the air laterally if they look after the SG ball for a little bit longer at the start. So you potentially could see the seamers bowling with the ball more than what we've seen in Sri Lanka. I think yesterday in the second innings, I think we only seen, you know, four overs out of the whole day bowled from both sides. So we'll not see that in India. I can see seamers being involved a little bit more at the start of the day when the ball's new, but there is a pronounced difference, a big difference between the SG ball and the kookaburra. Not quite as big as the Duke, but there is a bit of a difference between the SG and the kookaburra.
Okay, let's get on with it. I've been talking about it all show. Let's hear your 11 for that first test match against India in Chennai.
But the team England, picks itself.
England lose a toss and bowl.
Yeah, the team picks itself because England have set their stall out with, from the batting point of view. So Sibley, Burns, Crawley back down to number three, Root at four, Stokes at five, and I'd move Lawrence to six. That's the way I'd go. I'd want Stokes in at five. I want my best, arguably one of my best players batting at number five to sort of combat anything that, you know, potentially 20 for two. Because of the track record, the way things have gone, I'm not being ill of, you know, and sticking a boot into the top order. They've struggled in the subcontinent, and we've been 20 for two quite a bit. So I think Stokes going above Lawrence just gives me that little bit. Butler plays himself at seven. There's been a lot of talk about two spinners or one spinner potentially played Broad and Anderson. My outlook is, you have to pick Dombez. You can't, unless you're playing Mo and Ali, you have to play Dombes because you need that little bit more batting at number eight. And I'm not saying, he's playing for his batting position. This is number eight is still an all-round spot. You know, when you look across the side there, you're going to have Ravi Ashwin at number eight. He's got four test hundreds. You know, you look at, I think that Best has to play. The only thing with Best playing is you look at India's 1-6. They're all right-handers. And they're all going to play Best comfortably, turning the ball into him. So from that aspect, I think England's best option from a spin point of view is play Leach. So Leach has to play as well, which then gets me a conundrum, which one doesn't play? You have to play Archer because Wood showed in this series against Sri Lanka, you need that bat ram, you need that firepower. So then it comes down to the real, which one do you go with? Do you flip a coin and say heads Broad, tails Anderson? The way things have gone and the way I look at this, I think Jimmy Anderson, for me, pound for pound, in every walk of life and surface, is the best seam bowler in the history of the game. He's just taken 6 wickets in Sri Lanka, fair enough against some average batting. But because of that, I'm going to punt for Anderson over Broad in the first test match. Only because, if you ask me, without Sri Lanka, they hadn't been to Sri Lanka, they're going first test, I'll pick Broad over Anderson because of the way Stuart Broad bowled throughout the summer. He had the form going in. He had the, everything behind him. Now, I've just seen both bowlers bowl beautifully in Sri Lanka. I can't split the two of them up, but what I will go and say is that over the course of a 5-day test match with an SG ball in India, the way the two of them have just bowled, I'm just going to go. With Jimmy over Brody, and I don't know why. I've got a gut feeling that Jimmy will be better than Brody for that first test match, and that's all it is. And it's nothing against Stuart. It's just a gut feeling that I think Anderson over Broad in the first test match, and then let's see where their bodies are after that. Archer has to play. Stokes has to play. Both spinners have to play for me. So then it comes down to the 500 or the 600 wicket man. And unfortunately, Stuart, I'm sorry. I've just got a gut feeling I'm going to go with Jimmy.
Yeah, I went with Jimmy as well. Look, he's not going to play back-to-back tests. So it's simple as he's just taken a sixfer. He's England's number one bowler. He's the most successful bowler in their history. And he's got a great record in India as well. Well, not a great one, but he's certainly... He was a point of difference, I think. MS Dhoni flagged him up back in 2012. So, yeah, it's a tough call, but I go with Anderson. If you're going with that, is it a definite game that Burns comes in? I suppose it is. But
I don't know where we can get him in unless they play Folks. Unless they say, right, Folks is going to wait to keep for 4 test matches. That's the only thing I can think of is... If they think Folks can keep, right, we're going to India, Folks is going to keep all 4 test matches, Burns doesn't come back in, Crawley, Sibley, Root potentially at 3, Stokes at 4,
that's not gonna happen,
Lawrence 5. I just can't see that happening. I don't see where the top 6 doesn't change. And that's my other argument, wanting Stuart in my side, because I'm looking at the top 3, I'm looking at the 2 spinners, and I'm thinking, I could do some experience on this field here. And Archer hasn't played a lot of test cricket. Stokes can get you 3 for nothing, or he could go at 6 and over. Do I then turn around and say, well, do I drop a batsman and potentially play all my bowlers? It's such a hard decision for that first test match. I'd love to have both of them, Broad and Anderson, on my side because of, like I just mentioned, 2 relatively inexperienced spin bowlers, 3 very inexperienced top order players, and 1 in the middle order. If I was Joe Root, I'd want as many experienced players on the field as I possibly could. Now, that's where probably Mo and Ali would have fit in if he had played the first test match in Sri Lanka. And that's why it's such a hard decision to break Broad and Anderson up in this marquee key series. I don't think you can do it any other way. You need Archer, you need Stokes. The batsmen that are picked in the 16 basically pick themselves. There's no contingencies. Because if you go my way and you go 1 to 11 like that, you've got 12, your 12th men or your players that aren't playing are Anderson, Folks, Wokes, Ali and Stone. There's none of the batsmen in there, really. So I just don't see how you fit all these people in.
Is it not a risk that England, if we go in with that 11, you've basically got Anderson, who's 38, let's put that to one side for a second, but Archer and Stokes haven't bowled. That's a three-pace lineup with Bess and Leach. And you have two of them haven't bowled. They haven't bowled since three T20s in South Africa.
And what have they been bowling on? They've probably been bowling in an outside tent at -3, -4 in Loughborough. And you've got to go into that heat. And I know the modern day play does change. Franchises and moves around and plays around the world, and you go into tours now with very little cricket under your belt. I get that. I understand that. That's the modern day way. But you go into 40 degrees heat in Chennai to ask somebody to bowl 90 mile an hour, arguably the first over of the day, to potentially throw in them a new ball after 80 overs, 5.5 hours later, and saying to him, right, go and get me Rishi Pant out, Hardik Pandya out, Virat Kohli out, if Virat's still in at the end of the day, on day one, next Friday, after very little preparation time. I think that's a big ask. That's why, and it comes back, and I'll continue this, it comes back to what these players are being rested for here and where they're going. So the likes of Mark Wood, Johnny Bairstow, Sam Curran, they're coming back to England into an environment which is, one, freezing cold. Yes, they're going back to their family environment. One, freezing cold. Two, very, if you listen to the news, the way COVID is going, potentially, possibly might not even get back into the country to get back out of the country from a quarantine point of view. So they're going quarantine here, quarantine there and back. It doesn't make sense sending people home back into the English environment, the way the world is at this moment in time. Fair enough, you can rest them and leave them out and sit by the pool, by the hotel and do whatever, but keep them in the hot sun and keep them ticking over. Do not get their bodies to stop, because I know personally, if your body slows down and stops and then wants to go again, you're asking for trouble with injury. And I'm specifically talking about Mark Wood. Mark Wood comes home. John, I'm looking outside. It is white with frost. It was -4 last night in the northeast of England. He comes back for 2 weeks. He then has to go back into that 40-degree environment with a body which breaks down. You're potentially asking for more injury. There's a more injury risk doing that than there would be, especially with two flights, than there would be just staying out there, and not bowling for a week, or not bowling for 10 days. I think England have got this horribly, horribly wrong.
Yeah, I can see it. We've run out of time, Harmy. We will discuss this at length, though, next week. There will be a couple of big shows ahead of the first Test match, which is underway on Friday. I agree. I can see Bairstow coming into the top three. I can see Ali coming into the top three. I can see Pope coming in. I can see Folks will definitely come in. Ali could come in for Bess. And, of course, Broad will come in for Anderson. And, there is a certain Chris Wokes in there as well. Who's to say that Ben Stokes is going to be able to bat and bowl for four Test matches after not playing a lot of cricket for quite a long time? Plenty of ponderables. We haven't even looked at the India side, who's pulled up fit after their epic series with Australia. So we will do all of that and plenty more. Mate, loving your work. Thanks for the last couple of weeks. Sri Lanka series is now officially over, and it's all about India, which you will be able to hear exclusively live on Talk Sport 2. This has been the Cricket Collective with myself, John Norman, and Steve Harmison. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.